The views expressed in the following podcast are not necessarily the views of the United States Air Force or the Air Force Reserve, but rather the perspectives of the individual speakers. No endorsement of any particular person, business, or interest is ever intended.
Welcome back to Ready, Set, Airlift, everyone. I'm your host, Julian Hernandez. You may have heard a lot of talk lately around the wing and on our content platforms about Exercise Southern Star. Alamo Wing Citizen Airmen were among the thousands of U.S. and partner nation service members who showcased their lethality and readiness. So we wanted to take you behind the scenes of why this exercise was so important. Gentlemen, our first ever panel here on Ready, Set, Airlift. I've got four key leaders from across the Alamo Wing joining me here today to talk about Southern Star 25. Let's go around the table.
Good morning. I'm Doug Jeffrey, the wing commander. And down at Southern Star, I got to go and see some of the DVs, some of the generals, some of the ambassadors, and they actually let me fly a little bit. So I got to be a line pilot. And I'll tell you more about that later because that's an interesting story.
Hey, good morning, everyone. Major Carlos Rocha here at home station. I'm the 433rd AMXS commander. Down at Southern Star, I was the deputy as well as the on-ground commander for maintenance.
Morning, everyone. Lieutenant Colonel Christopher Jones, call sign Buttercup. I'm currently an FTU instructor pilot and the commander at the 356 down at Southern Star. I was able to be one of the many crew that was down there.
Good morning, Captain Mike Lane at the 68th. I'm the tactics officer, and then down at Southern Star as one of the mission planners and a projo for the exercise.
Outstanding. All right, thank you all for making time to be here today. For anyone in the audience who may have missed our extensive coverage of Southern Star, the quick recap is basically Southern Star was a massive multinational special operations focused exercise down in Chile, happening from the end of May to the beginning of June. There was more than 2,700 troops from different partner nations involved. Altogether, there was six countries that contributed forces and 10 observing countries. And it was described as the largest special operations training exercise in the Western Hemisphere. So pretty cool that the C5 was able to be involved with something of that scale and scope. So with that being said, I think I want to open up our first question here to be our participation in the exercise. For anyone who read the coverage, clearly was a win for the wing, right? But I want each of you to highlight the most important victory within that, in your opinion. Colonel Jeffrey, we'll start with you.
For sure. The one thing that I took away from this was we have to build partnerships, not just within our wing, but that's important, between maintenance, ops, medical, mission support. All of those are vital. But outside the wing, as we look inward, now we can look outward. Talking to all the generals, the folks from around the South America, Southcom, partnerships are vital to how we execute not only the mission of the United States, but for us to be able to work with them, we have to build those partnerships.
I'll echo what Colonel Jeffrey said. I think the overall goodness that I saw in the exercise, particularly when you're dealing with different cultures, is that acculturation. You get down there, and we're very fortunate that our wing commander has political acumen, but I would say it doesn't stop right there. It should be at all levels that people are working on their interpersonal effectiveness.
Did he just put me down, call me a politician? Is that what, a political acumen? That's a big word.
I was wondering that, and I was like, do I need to say something about that?
Why? What does that mean, political acumen?
With the shaking hands and kissing babies.
Here we go again. Shaking hands, kissing. I mean, Buttercup, come on, man.
No babies were kissed in the making of Southern Star.
Sorry. All right, I'll be quiet.
But that's something we all got to work there at different levels, and that matters. Because at the end of the day, operationally, one of the key things that you get out of those exercises is the C2 command and control. But that's based on each individual level. They're interpersonal effectiveness. So whether it's at the maintenance level or just pilot to pilot, sometimes it really is a handshake. Sometimes it's learning two or three words of Spanish. Sometimes it's just a smile. But I think we all got to do that at varying levels, and we saw how at the very top in other areas it was really effective. And then there were a couple facets where we certainly could improve. But if we're really going to work together multinationally and do that succinctly, we need practice with that. And that it was a good foray to work those muscles.
Sí, es muy bien.
Sir, I think you learned more Spanish in that one sentence than I did in 4 months of planning. One of the coolest things for me is seeing it soup to nuts from the concept development literally a year ago when Buttercup and I came to your office with an idea to seeing it actually executed was the relationship that ops and maintenance have off station that we can work to improve on home station. Multiple mornings, days, evenings, 2 in the mornings, I'd look at Major Rocha and ask him something. He'd look at me like I was an idiot because it was 2 in the morning. But then we were able to work through problems, work through the structure of how we're going to get the mission done, sharing a common goal.
To be fair, he normally looks at you like that.
So
I'm just saying.
About
just
halfway saying, okay. Through this, Major Rocha lost his glasses. And he was wearing two shaded glasses. So you never knew if it was actually awake looking at you, not paying attention. You just kind of had to go by faith. But generally, the answer was there. Sometimes he might have been sleeping.
I thought that he, like, I roll down into the hotel lobby and I see this guy with a beanie on and like sunglasses inside. And I was like, who is this? And then I saw it was Rocha and I was like, you just think you're really cool, don't you? I was like, what are we kind of portraying here? That was a big question.
Try going for a run and then looking behind you and having him walk behind you with his muscle shirt on.
That's true. Yeah.
I ran faster that day because of that.
Major Rocha, by debate rules, you've been referenced like 3 times, so I'm going to give you the opportunity to respond.
Yep, just a disclaimer. Yeah, the glasses broke about 2 weeks prior to the end of the exercise. Yeah, adapt and overcome for that. But exactly kind of like what my ops brothers here are saying, I think it was the mission collaboration with the host nation. And another layer that was added onto that for the U.S. forces that were there. So it wasn't just us as the reserves. It was also active duty there and the guard. But the reserves were the ones leading there on the ground. It was us, the 433rd. So it was just that mission collaboration, and like I said, my ops brother said it the best there. And then also just highlighting that we are an FTU primarily, but we're more than that. And I think that's kind of what we showcased while we were down there as well.
When was the last time that we did something as a wing like this?
Off station or?
Yeah, off station.
I'm probably the youngest person here and I've never done it, sir.
Well, we've had some interesting modulated success doing this type of exercise next door in the hangar.
He uses big words like modulated and
yeah,
success.
He keeps a thesaurus on deck.
I'm saying where the maintenance ops picked up, went someplace, and did something special.
So hearing some of the history on that one, sir, I think it's been well over a decade is what I gather.
Yeah, I think that's one of the impressive parts. I've only been at the wing 2 years, but certainly I have not seen anything like this in the time here. And I think that was the impressive part of it, the something completely out of the ops tempo for the wing and then to go down there and execute. But that being said, I think from talking, especially on the planning side, breaking some of that inertia was also part of the challenge, right, Captain Lane?
Yeah, so if I had a dollar for every time someone said, you want to do what? And yeah, you're a C5, that's never going to work. Or don't you guys just go to nice places and break? I'd literally be a millionaire. So from the AFRIC side to the joint force side to even the international side of it, when they hear Fred, they think break. We went and proved that that's not the case. We also went and proved that we can overcome challenges, overcome obstacles, and when we're given a challenge, it's not stop. It's how do we work through it as a team, whether it be downrange, home station, together with our controlling agencies to get it done.
For the informational purposes of non-C5 experts in the audience, Fred is a term of endearment for the C5 in the community. So if you hear that said, that's what that means. But no, I do think from hearing other folks reacting to our presence down there, it's the fact that you don't typically see a C5 involved in these types of missions that made it all the more impressive. And there was no doubt that our host nation partners were impressed when the Minister of Defense visited the aircraft. You know, she basically visited the C5 and was like, okay, I've seen what I need to see here, right? You know, no offense to any of our mission partners who were also present and doing their best.
That was nice. That was good. That was good recovery. My political acumen says that's good.
Excellent.
Is that right, Buttercup?
Passes the politifact check, right? But absolutely, you know, so it was as much about addressing challenges as it was just going and doing a cool thing, right? And so each of you lead at a different level in the wing. So you see different aspects of what we did through different lenses. So I want to take that opportunity to open it up to, let's do one lesson learned from your perspective, and then maybe just something broadly that the exercise showed you that you hadn't really realized or thought before about the wing or the way we operate.
Sure. One of the highlights that we saw was a very specific mission, DCA, a defensive counter air, which the 433rd had never, to my knowledge, participated on, much less probably anything fleet-wide specific. But to get there and move towards some of the ACE concept and integration, and particularly a potential Indo-PACOM type scenario, was really invigorating. So that was the plus side of that, what we saw, that we could go out there and start doing some of that. I think one of the things that we personally came away with after that is our airframe being slightly more seasoned than some of the other aircraft. We certainly don't have every new electronic whiz-bang feature that, say, some of the fighters or some of the other platforms have. So we were able to identify a few shortfalls, and I do think those areas where there is some risk, I think with ample training and the right crews, you can mitigate some of that. And not to get too much down in the weeds, or we can, depending on our time span, but one of the things we saw is that in an area of operations, the C5, as far as navigation, has great systems to get you from point A to point B, but the overall situational awareness of where you are in context to the rest of the world, that's less robust.
Now, let's talk about getting from point A to point B. And for those listening, Buttercup is smiling and laughing.
Knew this was going to come.
So, well, this is just in when I told you, I kind of hinted that they let me be a pilot. So I got to fly the C-5. I love the C-5. I've flown it a long time. I'm seasoned. Thank you, Buttercup. But they put me in the seat. You know, we taxi out, got some great taxi practice, got out there, got lined up, pushed the power up, and we start taking off. And all of my instruments, they're not working. And I thought they were like messing around with me. I was like, all right, hey, let's tune, identify, and monitor. Like, I'm going back to my basics in T-37 of navigating, because all of the things that we get used to, all those whiz-bang things that Buttercup's talking about, we navigation-wise, we didn't have it, and we have to go do this mission. So I'm like, all right, the old man can still fly a little bit. And so I got to fly a little bit without GPS. And so when we talk about what we have to do in an Indo-PACOM, we may not have GPS. We have to go back to the basics of flying, the tune, identify, monitor. Hey, where are my nav aids, navigation aids? What do I do as a pilot to make sure that I aviate, navigate, communicate? So we did that, even though they were jacking with me, and it wasn't them jacking with me. We actually had some issues, but we were able to handle it, and we did okay. We got we were on time, on target, landing in Antofagasta, which is a beautiful area. But it reminded me of Afghanistan. Like, it's in northern Chile, the mountains, the desert, the dryness. Literally, I got off the back of the plane and I was like, man, I am back in Iraq. I am back in Afghanistan with the mountains and everything. It was pretty interesting.
Yes, sir. On that, it the corollary for a lot of our listeners is if you're going to do your cross-country trip and all of a sudden Google Maps doesn't work, depending on people's familiarity, that could cause quite a bit of apprehension. The win of the story is that as soon as we landed, I mean, within minutes, Rocha leading up the charge, our maintenance guys came in there and actually fixed the system. So it was really great to see seasoned aviators get back to the basics, complete the mission, and the instructor pilots actually had a switch. We turned it all off. Just kidding. Come back, and then maintenance address what we had, and again, turn it around for the next sortie, and then we move forward smartly.
They did that all the time. I mean, what was the mission capability rate? What did y'all do?
50 out of 51.
98% for those of you who aren't great at math like me. I had to write that down, by the way. I didn't just figure that out on the go.
That's crazy for a C5. How? Like, people are still asking me, like, they saw the numbers and they were like, who's cooking the books? Because they know I love to cook the books, right? Don't answer that.
He does not.
Rocha, was it the new glasses?
It might have been the new glasses. Or it might have been the shades.
Okay, the shades, yeah.
That way. I was in. No. No cooking the books, for sure, sir. It was just a lot of, I'm going to steal one of your quotes, is a C5 in motion stays in motion, right? I think that the temperature was good for Fred. It didn't bust out into the hydraulic leaks or the fuel leaks that we're typically used to in the cold weather. And so that, and I think it was our it was a compliment of the team that we assembled before we went. We did take a lot of, all of our maintainers are great, but we did take some more seasoned folks. And that composition was money with the FCCs that went along with the air crews. And just some of the other specialists that we took with us, we were able to just keep quick turning the jets, and they cooperated, and we just kept it going. Plane was ready every time.
Now, were those TRs, ARTs, AGRs? What was the mix?
There was a few AGRs, and probably half and half on the TRs and the full timers, but I would say a majority of them have never been anywhere. So they got to put all this theory of ready now and execute it.
On the commander's point too, so now that you got 98% out there, the expectation to some degree is that you bring at least some of that home. What are some adjustments that might be recommended on the maintenance side coming home, and then also bring it to the ops side?
And before he answers, like, there's two operators at the end of the table that are just like shaking with excitement. I mean, they're waiting smiling. To pounce. They are just so excited about what you could and could not say. So,
sir, let me jump in for a second.
No, you gotta let him answer first.
This is something though that we can do to help them out. One of the things we noticed is that when we're talking to maintenance, we're flying around every day, they don't know what we're doing. It's, hey, take the jet. We see you do about 50 laps around the flagpole and come back, probably with something broken. We hand them the keys and say, see you tomorrow. That's not what we did down there. Each mission, every time we went out, I know I specifically, and I know Buttercup and a couple of the other guys, tried to really sit down with the teams as they were going, as they were fixing something. Go, hey, guys, this is what you're doing. This is why it matters. This is the end projection. So as we go fly around the flagpole, I was talking to two of the engine troops when we were down there. They're like, well, what do you do? Flying around the flagpole, as boring as it can seem, is actually extremely important so we can have those skills, sir, like you relied on, to figure it out in a safe training environment where we can go and execute it real world, and it's a non-factor. So I know on the ops side of it, one of the things we can get better at is letting you know what we do, why we're doing it, and even asking if you wanted to come along. We took a whole bunch of you guys with us when we went out and did some of the DCA, and we did just normal ops, and I think that opened our eyes as operators to, hey, what do you guys do to get the jet ready? But also show you guys, hey, this is what we're doing. We're not just going off and goofing around. And then down there to see the real world effect of, hey, we're loading
people up. Hang on. You can't give secrets away. You just said we don't get all goof around. Don't, like, he's a captain. I apologize. We need to strike this from the record. As an operator, you got to rein that in. Keep it deep. Buttercup's whispering in his ear right now. All right. Please continue.
We all know I don't like to goof around. Yeah, I forgot what I was saying.
So, sir, from the FTU, I'd like to make an official request on the data that Major Rocha presented, saying that the temperatures were amicable to us down there, that we have a satellite campus permanently down in Chile.
Yes.
That is one of the reasons we chose Chile, though, is because you have desert, heat, Arctic, wind, mountains. So we actually encompass the entire United States.
We also have a lot of friends down there now, so it might not be as hard to get a satellite campus of the 433rd in Chile as it might have been 6 months ago.
But for sure, but we need this is what operators do. We just talk, and Roach is just over here just smiling. Yeah, he's talking. What, Roach, what do you got for us?
What was the original question? I already forgot.
The original question was, based on the successes in Chile, what are some tangibles you are bringing back and the other maintainers who participate in Southern Star are bringing back to home station to raise the mission completion rate here at home?
So some of the things I think we implemented it down there was that attitude of the mission-ready airmen. It's kind of like all hands on deck, right? So everybody was literally doing everything, specifically like all the basic maintenance tasks. So whether it was the tow, whether it was the refuel, whether it was the pre-flight, those basic maintenance tasks, everybody just had a great attitude and everybody was just in there. There was nobody sitting in the shack that we had. Everybody was just out there. If there was cargo to be loaded, we were out there with the loadmasters and the FEs. So everybody was just doing everything. So it was a lot of it was the attitude going out there, one team, one fight, in regards to operators and maintenance. Sorry, I didn't mean to give a funny look. I was just messing around there. With that, I think a lot of it had to do, and Captain Lane and Colonel Jones could probably agree because they were down there with me. It's the communication. I think at first it was a little bumpy, right? Because we're kind of trying to get through it. We're in a foreign location. But I think as time went on, I think our communication improved drastically. Even at 2 a.m, I was looking at Captain Lane digitally with my eyes, right? Not physically because it's 2 a.m. But I think some of our conversations might have even gone into 3, 4 a.m, I feel like, because we were constantly coordinating with the airfield and civilian services and everything else, right, Captain?
Yeah, so I joke about it, but Major Rocha would switch over to Spanish halfway through and I'd have no idea what he was saying. But that actually really helped because my Spanish is zero, his is there. But being able to kind of work together with the comm flow to work with a host nation in their language made it way easier.
Yeah, it was, you know, Captain Lane got there first and he kind of got it all spun up. And then at maybe a few days in, Captain Wright, like you're like, hey, Major, can you kind of take this part over since you'll be on the ground? And I was like, yeah, of course. You know, that's what we're here to do. And that's where it would just back and forth. But like I said, it was just communication. I think that's the other big piece that sometimes we run into. Sometimes communication is that one area I think we can always improve upon. And, you know, because you run into personalities or you run into different perspectives, right? I was trying to think of a more smarter word. I'll have to hand it off to Colonel Jones for maybe another
thesaurus check.
Yeah, thesaurus check. But yeah, I think the communication and just the attitudes, those are the big things to bring back.
Yeah, I would, again, echo that. So much of that's in the attitude. And if we reverberate some of what General Alvin has mentioned with the DCWs and how big Air Force is changing their focus and shifting from crowdsourcing to how our wing commander presents a UTC and moves forward, and you have all the airmen from the same installation, that's kind of when we talk about that teamwork and motivation down there. It's hard to articulate, but that's really what it is. Not that I'm fawning over other services, but if you look at the Army and when they do a big FTX, or the Marines and they jump in their Mew, or a bunch of sailors, I know you were going to say another term, but sailors, and they're in their carrier strike group and they're all living together, like it's part of that. We need to hang out instead of, you know, it's just very easy and everything seems copacetic. We're at, you know, 1500 or whenever you leave, you just book off and you don't think about this stuff. But when you're in it together and you wake him up at 3 a.m. and he hasn't shaved and he hasn't got his glasses on and when you're still getting it done, that brings together a propinquity that we need.
Oh, and hang on.
Now we're just trying way too hard.
Pause. Did you? He has his phone out and he looked that word up. Pro what?
A closeness, a propinquity that we need to get this done.
I believe the military calls it esprit de corps.
Exactly. But we're not going to get to that, at least not as well, if we're just here next door. And being a participant of the Dragon Den, I did see some of that. You know, when we actually got some of our support personnel on a C5, and by the way, some of those individuals were here for years and had never touched a C5, which they support. So it's part of that integration. And guess what? Those troops, when we asked for something, man, they were on it. And that helped us be more effective and overall increases our lethality.
Alphabet soup, right? DCW, Deployed Combat Wing, which is an upcoming part of the changes the Air Force wants to make to the way it structures units moving forward. UTC, I'm blanking. Somebody help me.
Unit type code.
Yeah, so it's
correct.
It's what the actual breakdown is of the forces and equipment that the wing commander can provide for various tasks. So the Air Force seems to get very down in the details, very fastidious on this stuff. But at the end of the day, we need to provide for Colonel Jeffrey, when he is asked, our combat readiment airmen to provide strategic airlift.
So based on that conversation, I think it brought out some of the points that I wanted to address in my next question. So I'm going to go and segue that way, which I think it's no secret that, like any good family, sometimes the brothers and sisters don't always get along. That doesn't mean they don't love each other, you know, but it's hard to work on some of these things together with different personalities and different approaches and different mindsets, different priorities. But as you were kind of alluding to, Colonel Jones, you know, an environment like Southern Star makes that take a back seat, right? Because it's about the mission at the end of the day. So you guys have brought it out, but I want to address it more directly. Like, what are some of the specific takeaways as far as addressing those challenges in communication, those different perspectives?
So let me set the stage here. It's raining. It's night. It's dark because we didn't have any lights. Carlos had his actual glasses on, and we didn't have a part. A very specific part for a tow bar being the bolts. Two of us were beefing it a little bit, but then we kind of looked at each other and we're like, hang on. Actually, you said it, sir. One team, one fight. My question is, how do you forget the bolts for a big piece of metal? His was, well, they're not there.
Valid.
But through that, you know, that kind of, like you said, you know, you fight like family, right? Both of us have the same common goal, but different sub-goals. Mine was to get the mission going, get it rolling. His was, hey, we got to fix the here now problem. So working together, and you'd see it throughout the entire exercise. We beef it a little bit. 5 minutes later, give each other a hug, go back out with it and work the next problem. But we also bring two very different perspectives. I'm looking at it, how do I get the mission run downrange, like Buttercup was saying, lethality. C5 in and of itself, not lethal. What we carry, very lethal. Major Rocha is looking at it going, hey, yeah, that's great, but if you don't have a tire, that's not going to work. So how do we work? Again, this is one of the big lessons learned, is the ops maintenance synchronization. So how do we work together more on a day-to-day basis, on a major level, and even strategic level to make sure that all of our mission sets are accomplished to accomplish the common mission?
Oh, wait, I was waiting for Colonel Jones to jump in too.
You have 2 minutes.
2 minutes?
Anchor.
All right. So how do we work better together? Maintenance and ops, right? Oh, boy. All right. Let's see. I'm trying to make sure I think about this one a little bit.
Never take the jet anywhere.
We both work better when we're fed.
Yes, definitely when we're fed, well-rested. But I don't I think I go back to what I had said before. It's the communication, because we all come in with different perspectives depending on our experience level, maybe the different MDSs that we've worked on. Cam Lane, I think you came from a different MDS, right? Like a different culture, correct?
I did.
So I think a lot of those things play into any ops and maintenance community. It just depends on what culture has been previously established. And even coming here as a kind of like a fresh perspective, having come from the C-17s and the 135s, their culture was different. So my C-17 culture was very ops and maintenance. I mean, they loved each other. They did. And then in contrast, the 135s, like a little bit more of a dysfunctional family. But again, it just depends on the culture. And can culture be changed? Yes. It's like kind of like steering the Titanic, but even just one degree will get you to probably the location.
Let's not say that we're the Titanic. Let's say like a big ship, because I think the Titanic is at the bottom of the ocean right now. So we're a big ship. So continue.
Yeah. Homage to the Navy, right? Yes. We're the USS Truman, right?
Or
one of the Gerald Ford.
One that wasn't hit by an iceberg.
There you go. Yes. There you go. Much better.
Yeah. So, but again, just going back to the culture, I think it just depends. But to me, and maybe this is where my ops brothers will jump in here. It just depends. Can change happen? Absolutely. Can we change the culture here? Yes. Has it been a certain way perhaps for a while? Yes. Have we gotten an injection of new blood? And I'm kind of pointing to all the ops next to me here. So yes, I think that can change. And so Captain Lane, to answer your question, a lot of it has to do with perspective, communication, and culture change. I think it's most don't like change, right? Change is the one thing I think everybody always likes to fight against, but it's the best thing in order to keep improving. If we just stay a certain way, like, hey, this is how we always done it. I think Colonel Jeffrey says it almost, pretty much at almost every meeting. It's like, hey, we got to do things differently. But as we do that, we have to listen to each other, right? It has to be two-way feedback in order to be effective. And so I think that's what being down at Southern Star in a foreign location, in a deployed, almost a deployed environment, that's kind of what it simulated and it forced us to do. And it was good because I think we needed that.
Colonel Jeffrey, I think culture of the wing lands squarely in your purview as the wing commander. So based on what you're hearing here at the table, what's your input from your background coming from 135s and other platforms? But then also, how does this fit into how you're trying to craft and steer the culture of the wing as a whole?
When we talk about culture, it's down to the individual, but as we come together, that's what the culture of the wing is. A year ago, and I mean, I've been here for right at a year, and they came and said, hey, let's do this different thing. And I want the wing to think differently, because every single meeting I've ever been with a GO, and I have squadron commanders, I have SELs, everyone comes to the table and says, hey, General, we don't have enough people. We don't have enough money. We don't have enough resources. Every single time. So if that's the case, how do we continue to do the mission? We talk about, yeah, we're not going to do things. We're going to stop doing things. And we try, but ultimately, the generals still want us to do the mission. So if everything remains static, we don't get any more resources. We don't get any more people, any more money. How do we do things differently? Well, that's how we change the culture. So going down to Southern Star, allowing ops, maintenance, and we had Doc Tran down there as well, and everybody laughs because nobody knew he was fluent in Spanish, and the partnerships that he was building and like literally sewing people up, it's amazing. And I like where we're headed with the culture. This massive ship that we're steering one degree at a time over a year can do some pretty big shifts. So I don't think in a million years we would have got the maintenance rates that we had at Southern Star had we not thought differently, had we not acted differently. And that's a testament to the ops and maintenance. I mean, that's not me. That's them taking the overall intent that we laid out with Southern Star and they executed it to perfection. It was beautiful.
That emphasis on thinking differently, too, is all part of the changing priorities right at the highest level, the Department of Defense, the administration, right? A new strategic environment is what we're operating in. And part of that is, as General Healy points out, is transforming for the future, right? Being prepared for that future fight. Captain Lane, I know this is something you've thought about a lot. How does the C5's participation in Southern Star show the platform's continuing viability in our new strategic environment?
So if you look at what we accomplished, you had the joint force that didn't know what we did, where we were from, or what we could bring. We executed higher than any other platform down there, which was two C-130s, and then we still had room to spare. And we didn't need gas when we got to those locations. That's a perfect example of what we can bring to the combatant commander. If you think of, you know, the Air Force, specifically coming from other airframes, we're always Air Force driven. We're always like, how do we drop a bomb? How do we kill a target? How do we make sure my people are safe? C5, our customer is the Army. The Army loves us. The Army is realizing that we can move everything that they need to move in one go. And we can do it comfortably. And what Southern Star proved is we can do it reliably. So looking at the joint force, the combatant commander, the C5 is a force multiplier. And it's not a force multiplier the same way like the EX is, where it's carrying a ton of ANRAMs. We're carrying a ton of people, ton of things, and a ton of assets to where the combatant commander needs them. So if, like, looking at the next fight, that's our role. That's our role currently. We're just thinking about how do we do it differently, like Colonel Jeffries was saying, in a CDE environment where you don't have a GPS.
CDE?
Contested, degraded, and I forgot the E.
Probably just
environment.
Yeah, that would make sense. You can keep that or take it.
No, we're keeping it. 100%. We're keeping it. A tactics guy? Yeah, 100%.
You can have yet to hear anything that I want to cut.
So how do we function in that? And like, again, the you don't, we can't, we won't mentality of where the C5 was a year ago and everyone laughing at it, we proved that that's not the case. We're still viable. Yep, we still have our maintenance issues, but so do the two C-130s that are there. One of them's still there. And the C5 brought some of the parts so the other one could leave. So we do bring a lot to the fight, and we bring more than anyone else does. So we're an asset to multiply what the combatant commander needs. We just need to start thinking about how we do that differently than in the GWAT.
Colonel Jones, I was lucky enough to be in the aircraft with you when you did that defensive counter-air sortie. That was definitely different and proved the viability of the platform, simulating a... I'll let you speak to the technical, tactical terms more specifically, but essentially simulating an environment where it's not perfectly safe for the C5 to be there, but we got through it, right?
Absolutely. So what we, our intent was, besides to show the integration with the Chilean Air Force, and we worked very closely with some of their F-16 Vipers, some Block 30 guys, and as the mission commander planning on some of that, it was a real joy because leveraging some past and some experience from some seasoned gentlemen and ladies that were on the flight. And it was a success. Now, what that alludes to and will help with, again, particularly Indo-PACOM, is it's a paradigm shift. If you talk in very loose terms, some of the ways, particularly the C5 has operated in the past, would be these so-called, and I'll use it colloquially, milk runs from Hawaii to, let's say, Darwin, back and forth. Well, what this shows is that we could get much closer, and if things dictated that we need that, to the first island chain and integrate with some of our tip-of-the-spear assets and then get into some of these island chains and deliver what the combatant commander needs us to deliver and then get out of there. So it doesn't have to be, you know, we have some space lasers or do something really bizarre.
That don't tell them our secrets. That's true. Star Wars 2.0.
That's coming. That's palmed. It's in 28. That'll be there. Anyway, but it shows that we can, as crew, mitigate some of the risk and at least provide a service and an option for the combatant commander. Now, if we continue to move forward with that, that requires, just like anything else, like Colonel Jeffries was saying, competencies and proficiencies. So if we want to be able to execute that as a force, there's quite a bit we need to do on the schoolhouse side. There's quite a bit that our MOBs, our units on the coast that have C5s, need to adhere to, or at least be open to, if you want to demonstrate that proficiency, because none of that is inherent. And that's the whole point of exercise, to work that. I use what's analogous, having worked before with some of the team guys, and I'm sure Captain Lane can say the same thing. If you look at one of those platoons, the equipment they have isn't too far off of what you could buy here in Texas. Where does their lethality come in? How they operate, their C2, their teamwork with their supporting agencies, and repetition, and that proficiency, that's what invigorates lethality. And what I'm saying is that that DCA kind of opened the door, showing that we could do that as well.
Major Roach, I'm going to put you on the spot. So as everyone, as has been keeping with the tradition of this podcast episode, to keep the C5 viable in this new environment that we're talking about, to accomplish some of the things that the ops team is envisioning and knows that will be required of us from the maintenance side of the house, what do you want to see?
If I had to summarize it, it would be clear goals and objectives. And there was another word I was trying to think of here. Goals, objectives.
Phone a friend, Colonel Jones.
Colonel Jones? No, priorities. So even here at home station, I think I may have had this conversation with Captain Lane in regards to priorities. That's something that we harp on here at home station. As long as maintenance knows probably those three things, the goals, the objectives, and the priorities, we can effectively plan around that. I mean, our job is to make sure that bird flies and give them a safe aircraft as well. I mean, we're not over here cutting corners or cooking books. Colonel Jeffrey, we're not cooking books. Yeah, so it's, if we can have those three things, like we can effectively plan for that, regardless of what it is. So
not an assembly line of new parts to, you know, plus up our airframe that first launched in 1968.
That one is above my pay grade, Julian. So
that's fair. I appreciate you keeping the answer realistic. But staying on the strategics, but sir, coming back to you from the wing commander perspective, seeing some of the strategic objectives we were able to get after as part of Southern Star, some of the capabilities we were able to demonstrate, what kind of message do you think an effort like Southern Star might send to those who have ill intentions against the United States?
It was very telling at the hotel where we were staying. They had a bunch of flags up at the front. And when we got there, guess what flag was flying? The Chinese flag. A couple of weeks in, the Chinese flag was gone. Now, it wasn't us. We didn't take the flag down. But the hotel realized, hey, we got a bunch of Americans here. Service folk, probably not a good idea to have the Chinese flag flying in our face. So in talking with the multitude of generals, the multitude of ambassadors, the joint chief of the Chilean military, the message is clear. China is trying to make inroads through soft power around the world. And where in the past they had been really focused inwardly, their actions now are more outwardly across South America, across Indo-PACOM. When we look at that message that they're in it, they want dominance. They want to be the world power. They do not like America being at the top. They are a near peer. And they continue to do things that we have to be ready. And that goes back to the focus of this entire exercise, is showing that what we accomplished, that we're ready now, that we've done the things and we're transforming for the future. The attitude of we can't, we won't, we don't know how, it just won't fly. I mean, in this day and age, the things that we were willing to step forward and do, it's phenomenal. The can-do attitude, that's what we talk about culture. That's what we talk about moving forward and doing things and really restoring the ethos of what it is to be an American military member. Doing those things all the way down there with the team members, with the joint, with all this. I mean, there were some awesome people down there doing incredible things. That's restoring the ethos. That gets our people fired up. And to the letter, when I asked each individual airman, hey, man, how's it going? They're like, this is incredible. This is what we want to be doing. Can we do more of this? We want to do it right now. And like everybody at their head is shaking that, yes, they want to do more of it. It restores America's people's confidence in the military that we're able to go down there and show how we can be lethal. We can provide lethality. Those are the types of things that I could never have dreamed that the team would execute and march out on as well as they did. And it was, again, incredible to show what we can do. And it should give our adversaries pause. And if that's all it does, if it makes them pause and question what they're going to do, Southern Star was a complete success. Because it allows for us to continue to grow and for our partners to continue to grow and for us to partner with them to allow them to do it. Because we can't do it all. I mean, we'd love to. I'm American. We get it done. But that's why we have partners. To allow them to help share the burden. So, incredible.
Well, I can't think of a better way to wrap it up and bring it home than that. So we're gonna end it on that note. But I think from what I'm hearing, Captain Lane, I think Southern Star 26 is looking pretty good, right? If that's even gonna be a thing.
It's 27.
Here's the deal. What I told everyone, because everyone was like, please let us do this. I had multiple generals from different heads of armies. It was Brazil. It was Paraguay. It was Argentina. It was Costa Rica. We talked to across the board. Everybody wants us back. Everybody wants us back. So from a priority standpoint, I said, number one, we have to have the FTU back on timeline because the main mission of this base is FTU timeliness. We get the FTU back on timeline, and then we have a combat readiness inspection and evaluation coming up in the next year. I want to make sure that we're partnering with our IGI, our Inspector General Inspections, to make sure that we get credit for what we do. Because I have no doubt that ops maintenance, we can get down there and get it done. We got to make sure that we can partner in with medical, we can partner in with mission support as a whole wing concept. I think we can get there. So I'm looking forward to it. If we can get all those things done, then absolutely, I want to go back down there. It was beautiful.
Well, gentlemen, we could continue to sink our teeth into this for probably many hours, but to be respectful of everyone's time, I think we're going to leave it there. But thank you all for making some time for this conversation today. I really hope this will give our listeners throughout and outside the wing an idea of Southern Star, what was accomplished, why it was important, and why it was a meaningful involvement for the wing.
Absolutely.
Who's got lunch?
Highest ranking, I think.
No, there we go. Right.
The snacks are right there, Colonel.
Yeah, snacks. There you go. All you want.
All right, and one quick announcement before we go. The AF Connect app is no longer being supported, so that will not be a platform that we continue to update from this point forward. Please continue to go to our website, 433aw.afrc.af.mil, or check us out on Facebook and Instagram for the latest wing announcements. Also, for the upcoming UTA, don't forget the Alamo Flyer will be circulated via your military emails. That's going to do it for this episode. Thank you, as always, for spending some time with us. We hope to catch you again on next month's episode.